Okay, Bruchim Aboyim to the 18th in the series of Shiurim classes on the Meirin Nevuchim, the parts that in which the Rambam discusses the central topic of creation. We're now in the second Shiur, the second class, second lecture on chapter 30. Chapter 30 is the, it's just about the final, not the final, so it's next, there's nothing ever final in Meirin Nevuchim, but it's just about the final, it's probably close to the final chapter in the the section of creation. And then the Rambam actually is reading the Psukim in Bereishis, in the first two Psukim of Bereishis. Okay, so now, let's go back. We are on the page 362 in the Schwartz edition, in the third paragraph. We might have done this in the previous class, but we'll just go over it just to, because I think the Rambam says, "Ma shachay v'taladas," what you should know. Shachachamim amu mufurashos b'mispa mekoymos. Chacham is referring to Chazal. Shamila eis b'dabrei eis hashamayim v'eis haaretz. That the word eis that uses the pasuk eis hashamayim v'eis haaretz, right? It's with the tzere, right? He b'mashmos im. It means with. It was the pasuk doesn't indicate that should not read God created. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, but God created the world with the heavens and the earth. Meaning, as the Rambam says, "He's miskabdim b'zoi shubara im hashemayim eskom hashemayim v'ba'oz kom hashemayim." Basically, when in the initial act of creation, at least in the pasuk, the first pasuk of Bereishis, is giving us an account of the initial act of creation, everything was created at once. In other words, there was nothing missing. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is that we shouldn't look at the 6 days of creation as being the sequences of, you know, creations ex nihilo, but rather everything was created from the very, very beginning. Right? Now, he says you should know that, of course, Chazal have already said that the Shemayim and Ha'aretz were created together, one thing coming before the other. Became in Sha'omah, and here he quotes brings a proof for the pasuk of Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu says, "Koyani eleyem yamdu yachdav." Yachdav is referring to Shemayim and Ha'aretz, that they were created together. Mikan, right from here, we say, "Shakol nivra yachad," everything was created together. Okay, so now, if everything was created on the first day, so what are the 6 days of creation? What are the Shemayim Bereishis? What happened in the 6 days of creation? So says the Rambam, "V'advon nivdolu kulam b'zachazeh." What happens is that during the 6 days, things separate, become distinct, bifurcate. Ad shimshinu zois le'ika, right? The mashal, the metaphor is to an ika, to a farmer. Asher pizah zroim shenim adam b'dak. He sowed several types of seeds on the ground at 1 second. Some of them spread after 1 day. Some after 2 days. Some after 3 days. Even though the actual zriya took place at one time, the sowing took place at one time, they spread it out at different times. According to his opinion, now, of course, the Rambam is bachir like this opinion. We're going to ask a little while. We're going to actually try to step aside and see. You know, why? What's the Rambam getting at? Obviously, this is not the consensus of midrashim. It's certainly the consensus of opinions of mafoshim of how the world was created. What is the Rambam getting at? And it says it's nechonably safek. There's no doubt that this is correct. Well, there's no doubt that it's correct. The Rambam never addresses metaphysical issues with a nechonably safek. Niftra safek shechayim is rabbi barab simil me masha oma. Ah, so the Rambam says it comes to ask the question that was bothered rabbi barab simil. Remember, rabbi barab simil was bothered by the question, how can you say 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, when in fact the sun, which defines the day, was created first on the fourth day? And that was question number one. Now, question number two, which we spoke about in the previous lecture, was how could you even speak about time, right, when time itself was created? I mean, the Rambam back in chapter 13 says, "Krishna Xilo, right, implies that the world was not created at any one specific time. I mean, from how you started your days. So he says that, so we understand this to be two separate questions. The first question was, how could it be that we're counting days when in fact the notion of a day, which is contingent upon the revolution of the sun, is first takes place in the fourth day? So he says, this answers the question. Why? So he says, for this reason, Rabbi Rab Simon said, you see, there was time before creation. And then Rabbi Avol brought a second opinion that there were worlds created before this world, which means that the Rambam, of course, dismissed these opinions because his opinions seem to be in line with Aristotelian eternity. So he says, no, right? So in other words, Rambam says, this answers his question. Because the Rambam, it was difficult for Rabbi Rab Simon. Why did Rab Simon, why did he fry out? Why did he go to Aristotle? Right? It was difficult for him. How did you, I'll be mad named to, how can the Torah refer to Yom Rishon, Yom Shen, Yom Shlishi? 1, 2, 3 days. The Rambam of Roshim Omer Chachom and Beishas Rabba, ala or haniska b'teira shul nivra b'yem Rishon. So, in other words, they speak about the light that was created on the first day. In other words, there was light already for the first day. Everything was created for the first day. Except that they were hung. The lights were hung, not hung until the fourth day. Right? Now, really, what's the Rambam Hazarov answering? I mean, we still have the question. There's a revolving sun first on the fourth day. So what the Rambam says, the posh, the simple way of understanding the Rambam is, but there is some type of a sun. There is a sun from the first day. Since it's the sun of the first day, there's a constant of time. In other words, we see the sun as a distinct body which revolves around the world in the fourth day, but you should know that the sun and whatever celestial spheres are important for giving meaning to a day was really from the first day. So since from the first day you have a notion of light and the sun and the celestial sphere, it's not variegated, it's not distinct. A person might not, in other words, might not be able to recognize it, but it's there, it was created. So therefore there's a concept of a day even from the very, very first day of creation. That seems to be the simple meaning of what the Rambam is saying. Okay, everybody with me? Okay, fine. Now, it's interesting. It's not at all clear what these midrashim are. We're actually going into detail. But for example, some of the things quoted by the Rambam, it's not clear really. The midrashim are not, I mean, you look at the bottom, Professor Schwartz gives different notes. The midrashim, it's not clear how much is the medrash, how much is the Rambam's interpretation. But right now, I just want to move a little further. Okay, now, what is the Rambam getting at? What's the purpose of this? So, I think it's very important. This section here of chapter 30 is it's one piece. It begins here, I guess, on page 362. In the Schwartz edition, it continues 363, 364, 365, 366, 367. Well, it's a 367. In other words, the Rambam is going to more or less stick with this on this same topic, and he's going to get to 367, and he's going to say something extremely subtle. But I'll say it anyway. It's important. Now, don't accuse me, treatments, of misinterpreting the Rambam. This is the way the Babadella says the Rambam too, and it's Hakdamat the Malachias. The Rambam, at the very end of this discussion, which is also, this is the first, in other words, this is the first part of chapter 30. If not, the Rambam is going to speak about the Berishon, it's going to be about the Chet of the Berishon, the Nachash, etc., Kain Vehevel. But where the Rambam is going to get to, finally, is that the Torah is not giving me an account of creation in time. Namely, when it says the first day, the second day, third day, They're not days. In other words, they're not the place like a day. It's a day, 1,000 years, 2,000 years. In other words, they're not sequences of time. In other words, basically what the Rambam is going to get at the very end, is to teach us that really the Torah is not speaking about that on day one this X was created and day two Y was created. The Torah has no interest in doing that. But rather, the Torah is basically describing the cosmic, cosmological hierarchy from the highest spheres, right, all the way down to the terrestrial world. In other words, what the Rambam wants to do is, ultimately, what the Rambam wants to do is to rid the Torah, or rid the passage of creation from any sense of a historic, of a temporal sequence. That's where the Rambam is going. And he does that very subtly. By the time he does it, in page 367, no one really is going to be like a one little innuendo, but of course the Abravanel picked it up. So, what we have to understand is that everything the Rambam is saying over here is leading up to this. Now, of course, this might seem incredibly difficult. Why is it incredibly difficult? Because the Rambam, at the very beginning of chapter 30, right, spoke about creation of Bialo, B'yesh Mi'ayin, that's the sheet of the Torah, and the Rambam said that there were certain questions on the sequence of days, day one, day two, day three, which were really difficult, which brought Chazal to understand that there was time before creation, and the Rambam attributes these to Aristotelian, you know, to eternalist theories of creation. The fact is that the Rambam is in fact looking to extricate the concept of time from the first parak of Bereishis. He's doing the same thing too. And what he's doing is, he's basically going to arrive at a description of the passage of the first parak, the first chapter of Bereishis, independent of any sequence, any temporal sequence of creation. The merely Bereishis is coming to tell me, to inform me of the hierarchy of the, you know, the cosmos and the physical terrestrial, the, you know, the celestial and physical world, and not time, which means, interestingly enough, is that the Rambam actually took the question of Yudin Rab Simen very seriously, but very seriously on a deep, I'm saying, quote unquote, on a deeper level, Rabbi Yehuda ben Reb Simon asked the question, how can we speak about day one, day two, day three, if the sun is only created on the fourth day? So the Rambam gives an answer. Well, the answer is that the Rambam gives an answer. It's an answer in the Chazal. It's the Rambam trips the answer in the Chazal. That really the sun is from the first day. Except that it was Nitlowing, but whatever it is. In other words, the sun is distinguishable. It's creation on the fourth day, but it's there for the first day, and this answers the question of Yehuda ben Reb Simon. So very good, so Chazal answered that question. However, of course, now, first of all, very interesting enough is that in a certain sense, changes the whole notion of creation. Because a person reading the first paragraph of Bereishis would come to think that really, in fact, the Kodesh Baruch Hu could learn, because Baruch Hu is, you know, creating a sun on the fourth day. You know, things are created before that. In other words, the Rambam understands that creation is only an act of the different parts of the creation become distinguished in the gap of days, but really, in fact, the hug of the world does not radically change from one day to the fourth day, first day to the fourth day. However, the deeper question, which you spoke about last time, was that, how can you even speak about a day? Where do you start from? Given the fact that in creation ex nihilo, you can't say the world was created any time. It's a deeper question. It's a philosophical question. The answer is, my dear listeners, is that you can't speak about time when you speak about creation. If you can't speak about the first day, you certainly can't speak about the second day, third day, fourth day. So therefore what you have to do is you have to have an entire hermeneutical upheaval, a radical transformation of the reading of the first parak of Bereishis, where time no longer is important of any significance, but rather, first day, second day, third day is really a way in which the Torah, the Chumash, the Torah is really just describing the Harak of creation. Which means, what has the Rambam done? When the Rambam comes to the final sentence, the final statement here of this section, the Rambam has eradicated time. Totally eradicated time from being any type of an important descriptive element of the act of creation. And we end up, really, in a certain sense, with Aristotle. That the world was not created, in other words, the world was not created in time, but rather there's a description of the world, the way it is, the world at large, the way it is. That's really where the Rambam is going. But the Rambam is doing this in small steps. In small steps, the Rambam is doing it. He's taking it step by step. That's really where the Rambam wants to take us. Yeah?
What's the nature of this hierarchy? What is it?
So the Rambam describes, we'll see this in Mitzvah Shem, we get to, nature of the hierarchy is Aristotle's physics. But we'll get to this in Mitzvah Shem. It's actually his meteorology. It's an Aristotle meteorology. It's not physics, it's meteorology. But in 367, in Schwartz edition, there, basically, the Aristotle gives us the whole hierarchy of the celestial, physical, terrestrial world, right, in terms of et cetera, et cetera. That's what the Rambam is doing.
The difficulty, the philosophical difficulty of looking at the first day is not a question. It isn't a difficulty with days per se, it's the first moment.
Okay, fine, but once you, but that's the problem. The problem is once you can't define the first day, you can't define the second day either. The whole thing, it's basically a domino effect. Everything falls away. You're right. There's no way of saying the first day, so you can't say the second day, third day. That's really what's going on.
We don't see the Rambam saying it that I can't talk about an hour from now today because the first time.
No, because
the introduction of time is absurd. But we still deal with time.
First of all, according to the Rambam, time is not an independent thing. Time is actually part of motion. Once again, for the Rambam, time is not it's not our Newtonian or Kantian concept of time.
So the difficulty is that you can't have the beginning of time without motion or the beginning of motion without.
Right, that's right. No, it's time. So basically,
it's not a day issue.
Well, it is a day issue because I can't speak of whatever it is, I can't have the beginning of something. It was creation ex nihilo, like we said before, it's not a theory of creation. So if the world is being described first day, second day, third day, then we're saying the creation still was part of the theory of creation. Because of the first day, the world began at a certain time. You can't say that. So really what the Rambam says is you can only describe the world the way it is.
That's not an attack on this aspect of creation, days. It's an attack on creation ex nihilo.
Oh, right. Yeah, I agree with you. But in other words, a consequence of this is that you can't speak about first day, second day, third day. That's a consequence of that. Right. For sure. Okay, fine. Now, let's go a little bit further, okay? Now, what's interesting is, this is an interesting thing. I've thought about this a few times, actually. The Rambam is actually presenting to us, we'll see in a little while, what's called a theory of commensurability. If you look at the forthcoming lectures of our Soloveitchik, you'll see that the Rambam understood that really one could fit Aristotelian science, or that the Torah, we'll see in a little while, that's an introduction to what we're saying, that the Torah is in fact, right, can be interpreted in terms of Aristotelian science. There's no question about it, as we'll see in the next few passages, that the Rambam is going to take psukim and verses and say that they're referring to the four elements, etc., etc. These things were not. These things, by the way, were not known to Chazal. At least, Chazal were not revealed that they knew anything about these things. In other words, the Rambam understands that.
What Chazal don't know about the four elements?
No, there aren't four elements in Chazal. I mean, the word Eishib is in Chazal, but the world is composed of the four elements. I mean, I don't think there's a Chazal like that. Is there? I don't think so. What? There's no Chazal like that. I mean, I know that's a halachah about Shibesina in the yeshivas. But there's no Chazal like this. It comes from Aristotle, well, Greeks. Whatever. I'm not. It's something in Greek science. It has nothing to do with Chazal. And we'll see many other concepts too have nothing to do with Chazal. In other words, these are basically modern scientific concepts. Where did Gra get it from? Where did Gra get it from? The Gra got it from the Greeks too. The Gra knew Greek science. There's no question about it. He knew Greek. The Gra. Knew Greek mathematics. He wrote the Ayil Meshulash. Now, the Gra was about 400 years behind in mathematics. I know that the modern You know, the modern sheet is that the Goyen was mechavent to all different types of, you know, quantum electrodynamics and quantum theories. And he, right, and Kramer's rule. First of all, that's a lie. It's not like the Kramer's rule has nothing to do with the Goyen. The only, it's not the Goyen. The only case in the history of mathematics that an actual Gadol made a contribution to mathematics was the Ralbag, who produced the first proof of the binomial theorem. That was the Ralbag. When I was at Stanford, there was a long haul, a history of mathematics, and that's just a picture of the Ralbag, and says that he produced the first proof of the binomial theorem. That's the Ralbag. There's no Kramer, there's no Goyen, there's no nothing. Okay, and also too, he can't be. The Goyen's mathematics was primitive. The Goyen knew Greek mathematics, or he knew the mathematics that Chazal themselves used, perhaps, a little bit better than that. But the Goyen didn't know calculus. I mean, the Goyen in the 18th century, what was Gauss? Gauss was the 19th century, right? Beginning of the 19th century? I mean, mathematics was light years ahead of the Goyen. The Goyen believed the world was flat. The Goyen in Tikkun Isaiah, and this is the way also the Brewer up and came for Zoharitz, the world was flat. He said that, and everybody says he said that. I know that some of the present day Darshanim want to say that the Goyen was really saying a metaphor, that flatness and this, you know, it's not really flatness, it's really Mayim, which is flatness, and flatness and Mayim, this and that. But the fact is that the Goyen said the world was flat. There's no connection that the Goyen had no connection with modern science and modern mathematics. You should know that.
This is 300 years after we discovered the
world. I understand that. But the Tikkun Isaiah says, it's flat. It's a Goyen in Tikkun Isaiah. I don't know. I have no idea. It's a big kasha. That's why one of the present day Tashanim has to basically make an entire
kilpul.
I don't know. Maybe the Goyen sat in the room and just knew from the Torah. Put it this way. Based upon that, there's a famous mice of the Goyen. The Goyen came to a certain town, and all the professors in geography came to him. They asked him all the bunch of kashas. And the Goyen, like, totally, you know, confounded them and answered all the kashas. Obviously, the mice was totally false. And the Goyen felt the world was flat. Now, there's a disease today, a malaise, that if the Goyen wasn't the greatest physicist of his generation, so, like, you know, who is he? So he has to have been, like, the, you know, who cares? I mean, he was a bigger Talmud Chacham than Lobachevsky, and then Riemann, and then Gauss. Why do I care whether he knew mathematics? But I think people who try to think that the Goyen was Chavit, the Bell's theorem and everything, basically people have inferiority complexes. They feel that the Goyen is not the greatest physicist, like they can't respect. You know, these people are actually real maskila, because they don't respect the Torah, unless you can do physics too. These are the true YU people. But anyway, in any case,
it is a little problematic.
It's problematic, but let me tell you something. Not only does the Goyen write it, but all the Talmidim, I think all the Talmidim say that this is what the Sheet is a Goyen. All the Talmidim of the Goyen, whatever they say, that the Sheet is a Goyen.
The Goyen not being the biggest physicist, and not realizing that.
Look at the thing and try for yourself. It's a Tikkun Isaiah. I know one big Darshan took it very seriously. He tried to give him a whole. I mean, obviously, you know, he saw that. I mean, he understood what was going on, and he had a, you know, miyash of him. He wasn't really. I don't blame him either. Anyway, but go back. The Goyen knew. I think the Goyen knew. He knew the mathematics that was needed to understand the Gemaras. That's what I'm saying.
What's the objection to reinterpreting that Goyen means something else?
What the Goyen speaks about that the world was flat. Why is he the Goyen speaking about a Marshall?
I don't know, but
is he not a
Chazal? I also don't know why he.
I don't know. I don't know either. But why should I take the Goyen's word out of context? What the Goyen saying is not really that it's flat. That basically he's saying that Mayim is roundness and Earth is flatness. Why take a Goyen and totally misconstrue his words and butcher it? For no reason.
It's not likely that the Goyen was an idiot.
Okay, so you know what? You have a kasha. You have a kasha and a Goyen. The Goyen says the world was flat, but it's not the Goyen says the world was flat. Everybody says the Goyen Shita was the world was flat. In Lando, Sulam Eliyahu, what are the thing at the bottom there? I have it in my head. Whatever's the form of the Goyen. They all say that this was the only Shita of the Goyen. He sat in the room and learned Torah all day.
He went to the Bodleian Library.
What?
He went to Cambridge to...
Who said he went to the Cambridge Library?
He had a signature. He took out every volume of Shas. Everyone knows that.
The volume of Shas maybe he took out.
Yeah.
But
not physics. He went and checked the manuscripts.
What does he say that? What does it say that? Would you read that?
He would have known.
I don't want to say on camera.
What?
It's Yadua.
It's Yadua.
One of your cousins.
Nah, that's ridiculous. I don't believe that the guy would have wasted 15 minutes of his time going to a library
to check the
Gersos. The guy is not based on Gersos. The guy made up his own Gersos. The guy that absent the manuscripts that we don't have, and why the Sidra Taira are attacking the guy for changing his eyes? I mean, the guy could have said, I had manuscripts. Hey, fine. I don't want to enter into a discussion of the guy, but he was a guy in Taira. But he doesn't have to be Feynman to win my respect. I'm sorry to say, but that's, you know. I respect Torah more than science, but those people say not like that. I respect science more than Torah. But in any case, it's not true. The Isle Mishul, whatever it is. But look like this. The Rambam here is what he's doing is he's trying to create what's called commensurability between Torah and science. In other words, he's looking at the Pesukim in Bereishis. He's striving it according to Aristotelian theories. We'll see a little while. Now, first of all, we have to understand that why is the Rambam doing this? Well, first of all, the Rambam said this in his Hagdama introduction. The Rambam says, why is the Torah begin with Maaseh Bereishis? The teacher that was before we develop a theology, we should know the reality of the physical world, the scientific reality of the world, as the Rambam says. So, in other words, the Rambam and also the entire Mary Nebuchadnezzar. As we've discussed, and we have discussed that actually, in the introduction, the Rambam says that before a person comes to the secrets, right, of what he's supposed to learn from the Mary Nebuchadnezzar, he's supposed to be schooled in physics and then in metaphysics. Where am I going to get my physics from? Obviously, right, I get my physics from the Torah, right? What's the physics of the Torah? Aristotle. Well, the Rambam is going to try to fit in Aristotle into the first parak of Bereishis. That's number one. And that's what the Rambam is going to do right now, right? Now, by the way, this is fine, because everything the Rambam is saying is not a chiddush in science. You see, some people today try to make modern science commensurable with Maaseh Bereishis by creating all different types of funny, weird, bizarre theories, you know, as if like we're on one speck of one comet that's going at a certain speed that works out to exactly 6 days if you use Einstein's relativistic equations. I mean, you expect an intelligent person to buy that. But in other words, the Rambam is fitting in my separations with what was accepted, you know, the accepted theory of which, you know, Aristotle wouldn't give a hasakama to that. Right? I mean, so it's not the commensurable theories that we read about that are forced down our throats, you know, in order to, you know, to resolve the scientific and biblical views of the world. But the Rambam is actually going to, you know, take the Pesukim and learn in the Pshat of the Pesukim how the Pesukim is actually referring to Aristotelian physical science. That's what he's doing. Okay, that's the introduction to this section. Once again, why is he doing this? He's doing this because eventually he wants to arrive at a reading of the first parak of Bereishis as merely a description of the physical universe which we behold, and not a description of the evolution of the creation and time of the world. That's what he's doing. So he says, "Bima shechayev ataladas," what you have to know. Now, it's interesting. I want to be medayi. What do you mean you have to know? At page 362, "Bima shechayev ataladas," you have to know. What do you have to know? And he says, what do you have to know? You have to know is, because as the Rambam, not like the Kalam, at arriving at a proper theology, you have to know what the scientific truth is. Like the Rambam says in Perek Ayin Aleph, the first chalik, page 189 in the Schwartz edition, says b'sikuma shel davar, in his attack on the kalab, says the Rambam, in conclusion, I'm in a chash davar hu kama she'ama temiastius. I'm gonna say something that Timiyasha says. He says, "Ein hametzias hoylechas beikvas hadeyas." Physical reality is not a consequence of what? Of hashkafa, of theology. Ella, rather, hadeyas on the choinos, the proper theology, holchos, are a consequence beikvas hametzias from scientific reality. You have to know. Because if you don't have your science straight, right, you'll be all messed up. You're going to have terrible... that's terrible. That's a theological tragedy. In other words, you shouldn't make up, right, any type of a intelligent design theory. You have to learn the psukim, right, completely in accordance with Aristotelian physics. Atachayev adas. Otherwise, you can't read my book. What the Gemara says is the introduction. The book is written only for people who are well-schooled, knowledgeable in Aristotle's physics. Right? Atachayev adas. You shouldn't think that the world has any other nature. So he says, Mimash atachayev adas, which you have to know, she'eretz she'em beshutav. The word eretz is a refers to what? It's a common expression. It's a general the eretz refers to a general idea and a specific idea. Of a cloud, eretz means the four elements. It's also said, eretz also knows eretz refers to the four elements, which means the basis of all of the terrestrial world, or the sublunar world. And it's also a term which refers specifically to the ground. In other words, basically, Eretz can be understood by computer means refers to the ground, the earth, but also refers to the scientific concept of matter, which is the four elements. Arai Lakav, what's the proof of this? It says, V'aretz hoysa soy v'voy v'choyim apnei sohoy. V'ucham akir chazlamayim. Now, and he calls everything Oretz. In other words, what's Oretz? Soy v'voychay v'pnei soyim v'chalakim al ma'amayim v'chalakim li'abosha Oretz. Also too, now, gam soy gadol min ha'soydois. There's a soy gadol, a secret. She'kol emesh ha'damayis yotzi oyim v'yikalakim l'kach kacha ein ze'el avdilo b'nei idin ha'acha she'shem ze'm b'shuta b'nei. In other words, when it says God called this thing like this, doesn't mean he called it, he gave it a name. But what it means, it comes to distinguish one thing from another thing. L'chach pirash l'chach l'pasuk. Therefore, I explained to you the pasuk. B'atchala b'akel samayla v'samata. God created everything above and below. What above and below? It means the celestial and terrestrial world, the upper lunar and the sublunar. In other words, land means everything below the moon. Because according to Aristotelian science, the sublunar world is composed of the four elements. The upper lunar world is not composed of four elements. It's not really of matter as we know it. Kolayma abha yisaitis. The four yisaitis, the four elements. V'soy shenema, v'yikra lakim liyabasha eretz, ya'eretz levada zebo eifet. In other words, eretz refers to actually land, but also refers to the four elements. Everything below the moon. Mashachayam to ladas. Now, very interesting is, the Rambam is going to read the four elements into the pasuk itself, in specific terms. Shamanu shem eretz rish and moir alayim, became in shizku eretz, umayim, so it's eretz, umayim, v'ruach, v'chayshech. In other words, earth, water, wind and fire are the four elements. Okay, very good. Eretz. In other words, in general means the four elements, but here it also means one of the four elements, that means earth. Mayim. And then the ruach is wind. Now, the next element I know, not from my secular education, but the next element is what? Is fire. It says the Rambam, that's choshech. Choshech hu eish ha-yisoydis. Darkness refers to the fourth element called fire. Wow. What's the difference with fire? Says the Rambam, al tachshav ha-cheres. Don't think anything different. Don't think anything different. Why? What does darkness have to do with fire? Punt for count. Exactly opposite. I'm no. Incredible, says the Rambam. On one hand, it says in Har Sinai, you heard God's words from the fire. But then it says what? Kishamachem is hakol mitoch ha-choshech. You heard from the darkness. So it must be what? Darkness, the same thing as fire. Kol choshech tom litzfunav, tachleyo eish loy nupach. It means the pasuk on the earth. Which means darkness sometimes can be a kinoi, can refer to the element of fire. Now, why is that true? In other words, the very first fire didn't illuminate. It was transparent. And that's called darkness. It's very interesting. So the Rambam is a question. In other words, if the first fire was illuminating, right? But then, in fact, as at night, we would see everything. Interesting. Okay, so now, very, very good. The words of the first psukim are actually referring to the four elements. In other words, we have here an exposition of Aristotelian physics. Now, the Rambam is gonna bring this point home. In other words, don't think I've just made this association with the four elements, but in fact, actually, we can actually see even in detail how the psukim actually are really intending to convey these, you know, the physicality of the four elements. Ha'aretz, you have the earth, me'aleh ha'mayim, on top of the, you know, the different weights. So first, earth is the heaviest, me'aleh ha'mayim, above the earth is water, ha'aretz dovah b'mayim, and the air, I guess, is connected but above the water, and the fire is higher. You know, this is fits into Aristotle. He became a sheyichad ha'aretz al p'nei ha'mayim. Very good. So in other words, the Rambam is in the pasuk. The Ovir is al pnei amayim, Ruach Elokim. Rachev is al pnei amayim. That fits further into Aristotle. The air is lighter than water. And of course, Choshech al pnei sahayim. So the Rambam, that's really above the Ruach. That's what fire is. Fire is the lightest. Ubashachayim shikolacha Ruach Elokim, Ushanech oisa noe. Ah, why is it called Ruach Elokim? See, interesting. Ruach Elokim seems to be theological. Why is it scientific? Why Ruach Elokim? Because it's moving. Ruach Hefes. In other words, somehow movement is associated with God. Maharal. The Ruach Nasa Meis Hashem. It was movement associated with God. But here, the Rambam is saying is the word, the usage of the reference to God, right, is coincidental. It's not coming to tell me a spiritual thing. Ruach Elokim, Ruach Elokim. It's trying to tell me that the Ruach is above the water. That's the third element. Elokim, because since Ruach happens to be associated with the divine, so Derech Agav, we put the word Elokim there. Nishpach, Ruchachav, Yapach Hashem, Ruach HaMayim, Tzadu, Kaboy Sacharpe. Bekeben Shachoyshet Nebem Rishoyna, Shu Es Shem Yesoyt. Enu Achoyshet Shem Achroyna, Shu Ha'ofela, Hachela, Havil, Abdil, Achoyshet Kora Laila, Zebo Eifah. Now, as Rambam says, Achoyshet mentioned two times, so what is so, what is not yesod? Okay, fine. So once again, what the Rambam doing? What the Rambam is doing is very, very totalitarian about this, you know? Don't think anything else, this and that. In other words, basically, the Rambam is taking the Chumash is basically giving me an exposition of Aristotelian science, Aristotelian physics. Okay. The Rambam goes further. Mamash Chai Bataladas. Now, we have a problem. Up till now, we're describing the sublunar world, right? Which we all know and love. It's the four elements of earth, fire, air, and water. Okay? Now, we all know that according to Aristotle, as opposed to Plato, we've seen this in previous chapters, that the heavens were not created, you know, from the terrestrial world, for good reason. Because the terrestrial world is of an entirely different type of physical or composition than the celestial world. So, if this is true, by the way, Derech Agav, the Rambam alludes to this for the fact that it says the heavens and earth were created at the same time. Why at the same time? Say, well, it's created. Because if you say the heavens came from the earth. You have a problem. You have a contradiction of Aristotelian science. Heavens can't come from the earth. Earth can't come from heavens. It's min b'shein amina. Now, it says in the pasuk that Baruch Hu was mavdil the mayim. In other words, when you learn Chumash, you think like there's this big water, this big fish tank, I don't know, with water, and God like puts a thing in and divides the upper water from the lower water. That's how I learned Chumash. That's a problematic. What's it problematic? Because that's true. That seems to imply that the terrestrial and the celestial worlds are basically the same thing, except that, you know, they divided, you know, the upper water from the lower waters. But that can't be. Because according to Aristotle, the upper lunar world and the sublunar world are totally different. They have nothing to do with each other. So says the Rambam, don't be fooled by the reading of the pasuk. It doesn't mean that. Very nice. Says the Rambam, Masha chayev atalatas, which you have to know, right? Don't read the pasuk anyway, it's going to be a stinger to Aristotelian science. He's not dividing things. Don't think that he both have the same teva. No, don't think that the heavens are the same thing as the waters, upper waters and the lower waters. Just that one is above, one's below. That can't be. Of course, that's a contradiction to all of Aristotle. Don't think that's to mean the pasuk. God didn't divide them. Is that a geographical division? It's not a division in space. It's a division in nature. They're two different natures. That's what Rambam says.
Same thing is what he said by the name.
They have a totally different tzura. Heavens and earth have nothing to do with each other. They're two different worlds. In other words, he calls Mayim just something else. And below is real water. That's not the original water. Part of that is the water that we have, but there's other water which is. And part of this water, which is a totally different type of water. Just like it says, God divided between light and darkness, or v'choshe, right? Doesn't mean that the oil came from the choshe. They're two different things completely. So the same thing here too. The two waters, and what is that water? He says he uses water, but one water refers to actual water, H2O. The one water has to do with water.
Does Rambam really believe the Torah is saying Aristotle? Or is he fitting Aristotle in the Torah? Dainu,
I can't say in questions that Rambam believe. I can't say what Rambam believe.
If Luyatsuri, Aristotle would be proven to be not the correct science of the world, would the Rambam then cross off the first chapter of Bereshit?
I don't think the Rambam, first of all, I think
he would write in,
you see, you're asking a question for the 20th, 21st century. In other words, in hindsight, we've seen scientists change. See, the fact is, the argument, this is what Soloveitchik says, the argument against commensurability, right, is that, well, science changes, I'm going to have to change how I understand the Torah. Therefore, Soloveitchik says you can't, you know, it's stupid, it's ridiculous to think that the Torah is referring to science. But you see, that's Soloveitchik speaking in the 20th century. But the fact is, in the time of the Rambam, I don't think the Rambam had any Havamina that anyone would overtake Aristotle.
But Lemaise it has, so now what are we supposed to do?
No, so I think, look, I don't know what the Rambam, I don't know, I can't tell you what.
Are we supposed to believe that Aristotle really is right because the Pharisee took him in the Torah?
I think the Rambam understood. I think we have to understand things in terms of the emergence of paradigms, which will be in the upcoming Rishimo journal. In other words, today, I would say today, since we know that science, the paradigms of science change, more intelligent people are more likely to dismiss the notion of commensurability. right? The Rambam lived at a time when people were so convinced that scientific truth was, you know, static, this and that. So, for something like the Rambam, it was a given that the Torah, you know, is communicating to me the proper science. And that's what the Rambam is saying. Now, the fact is, the Rambam is doing pretty well, at least in Or V'Choshech. Here, he's not doing so well, Mayim and Mayim. You know, but in other words, you can't ask a question like the question that you're asking. In my opinion, is not a proper question because the Rambam was thinking totally different than we do. The Rambam had no idea that, you know, these things can change. So as far as the Rambam was, Aristotle was a given truth that would never, you know, chayfala yavor, and the Chumash is the truth too. So therefore, conventionability is a very natural, you know. But, resolution.
But my question is, for me today, am I supposed to believe Aristotle throughout the
life? No, so for you today, in other words, for you today, you see, what happened is that we take much, I mean, in other words, the distinction, the dichotomy between ontology and ethics has become much more of a part of our thinking today. So for sure, there's no question about it, that we have to look at the Chumash more as a document of a revelation ethics than as a document which is coming to communicate a scientific theory. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik.
Sorry, it turns out these four pages are only of interest.
They're interest at the time of the Rambam.
It's a historical.
Right.
Familiarity,
right.
But there's no relevance of these pages of Moreh Nevuchim to me today.
Well, what is relevant to the Moreh Nevuchim, which I discussed, is from Perek Ayin Aleph. The Rambam feels that a person cannot create a theology based upon a full science. Don't think otherwise means the Rambam says.
So then the Rambam himself is saying, take out these pages now because it's false science.
Well, you know, it's like I said before, it's a different paradigm. In other words, Rabbi Soloveitchik mentions in his lectures a very famous theologian of the 20th century, originally called Barth, B-A-R-T-H. And Barth believed. Barth understood that Barth was a Protestant theologian who felt that, I'm mentioning him because Rabbi Soloveitchik mentions him. Barth was a Protestant theologian who believed that he wanted to get theology back to its root. In other words, that theology had become too caught up with the concurrent trends in science and philosophy. In other words, Barth says, if the Chumash uses scientific concepts which are outdated, it's not a chisaron. Because the Chumash was being communicated to people at a certain time. In other words, if people believed that, in other words, that the sky was water, it doesn't take away from the truth of the revelation. Because Kosh Baruch was communicating to them to where they believe at the same time. Now, for example,
Wait.
So, for example, the Rambam says like this in Moreh Nevuchim in several places. For example, why does the Chumash speak about the hands and legs of a Kodesh Baruch Hu? We spoke about that. Why? Because obviously, people at that time, most people thought God had a hand. In fact, the Rambam's Tamei HaMitzvos in the Chelek Gimel is almost based upon the fact that the Chumash was trying to communicate theological terms which were relative to man. Right, it opens up a can of worms. No, I'll tell you, yes and no. A modern day person would parcel that shita and would say, well, you know, that's true that the Chumash is not timely. In other words, the Chumash is not the Gad Bizban Azer. But it's not necessarily true. In other words, if we look for the Chumash to communicate scientific knowledge, you're right. It's not relevant. But if the Chumash, when communicating a certain, even scientific knowledge which has been outdated, right, nonetheless has ethical or theological content, then it is relevant today. Well, that's what you have to say. In other words, if you believe that, you know, the basic idea that Rabbi Soloveitchik wants to bring out, and I think this is part of the Shittas HaRamba, well, I mean, at least, you know, is that, you know, things evolve. And the Chumash communicates a message, but will use terminology or concepts that were most applicable at the time that was communicated. And the fact is that these things evolve. Like the Torah Shebi'al Peh evolves the Torah Shebi'al Peh. And there's nothing possible in that.
But the question runs deeper than just the commensurability of science and theory, because the Rambam's doctrines of what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is and how he relates to, how we can relate to it and how it relates to the world is based on also on the founding science.
So that's true, but the Rambam, when the Rambam says the Torah was using anthropomorphic terms, the Rambam is being maida.
Not in his interpretation of Chumash. In the Rambam's exposition on what is God, the question of what is God. The Rambam's metaphysics and his theology, therefore, is based on Platonic science.
But the Rambam's theology is not really based upon Pesukim. If you look
over, it's based on Platonic science. The question is,
I understand this. The Rambam understood very, very well that things evolve.
So,
even though he'll read it into Moshe Rabbeinu,
the entirety of Gemara Nevuchim, in as much as it can be a religious book, maybe is no longer relevant. Maybe we shouldn't read it anymore, because if it's based on Platonic science, Platonic science is obsolete.
No.
In using the Rambam's own logic.
Yeah.
That it's
No.
Historical curiosity.
So I would say.
Not just chapter 30. The whole.
Yeah,
the rest of them are in the book.
No, so I would say. I hear what you're saying. So I would say like this.
So say that.
The Gemara Nevuchim is not relevant to us. What's the Gemara Nevuchim? The relevance is not relevant to us because we believe philosophically what the Rambam believed. The Gemara Nevuchim is relevant to us because it's a precedent. What's a precedent? The Rambam was living in a certain time, the Middle Ages. The Middle Ages, which had ideas of incorporeality, right? And which he was trying to resolve with the text. I mean, the Rambam in the first chelik is fighting the text. Right? So what does this mean? The Rambam somehow takes a certain way of approaching the Chumash, or even approaching Chazal. Right? Now, today we believe differently. But the derech of the Rambam is still the Rambam. In other words, today we might not believe this and I believe that, but it's not important. In other words, the Rambam sets a precedent, the derech, right? And how do we resolve modernity with the historical, the historical metzias, the historical, of the Chumash itself? And that's the thing. I think that, in other words, it's like, I think Moshe Beck was writing an article on that. In other words, the Rambam is giving us a derech. Even if I reject Aristotle, the fact is that, in other words, the Rambam is saying is just like Aristotle might have been irrelevant to, biblical science, right? Whatever conclusions that Rambam is going to come up with, that is going to be no less relevant to whatever conclusions we come up with relativity as opposed to the Chumash too. Because, in other words, Aristotelian science could have been just as far from biblical science as Einstein is. That's what I'm saying. That's what I think. In other words,
in terms of dogma, chachik.
Yeah.
You say that if the Rambam's 13 principles should be.
No, so that's what I'm giving. This is where I'm giving classes now in Yud Gimel Ikrim. I had a problem 2 weeks ago. Some girl said they couldn't daven mincha. But I think Mark Shapiro's work is, Shapiro says that people are cholek on the Rambam. It's not true. What happened is the Rambam presents Yud Gimel Ikrim, and there's Spitz medieval Ikrim. What happens though after the 16th century? That already our ideas about God change. Is that called a machloikas?
Paradigm shift.
Right, it's a paradigm shift. Things have evolved. In other words, is that the Kabbalah's cholik on the Rambam? A machloikas is that two people get together in the same room and argue. The Kabbalah's not cholik on the Rambam. The Kabbalah added another dimension to the relationship between, God and the world. So, is that a machloikas on the Rambam? In other words,
it contradicts the Rambam's philosophy.
No, but it was like this. The question is, I mean, I haven't gotten to any conclusions on this, but the question is, in other words, given what the Rambam understood we have to believe in terms of in the medieval times, in other words, what does that tell us what we have to believe in the 20th century? That's what I'm claiming. In other words, that's the way you come out to be looked at. In other words, Even if we assume the Yukim al-Ikrim, we have to believe it, whatever, I don't even have to believe it. In other words, what the Rambam's saying, it might be that 600 years after the Rambam, right, the world's changed. The question is, what is the relationship of the Yukim al-Ikrim to philosophy, to God, as was understood at the time of the Rambam? And can we make what's called a transformation, which leaves things invariant to what we believe about the world later to the Torah too? That's what I would say is the issue is. So Shapiro is wrong. It's not just a hodgepodge, toil vavoyo. There's clearly ways in which we look at the world, we clear the right way. Okay, now, I see we're running out of time.
So you'd say
Shachos,
which is good.
No. By the way, Yigdal shouldn't be said anyway. They say it's said by one of the Sefer Manarel, whatever it is. I saw David Cohen. Alright, we will stop over here. This is the beginning of an interesting thing. It's going to get more interesting as we go along, and we'll continue Mishnah in the next class. Be well.